Hello, and welcome back to the Next Stage podcast by Web Summit. My name is Luke, and today we wrestle with the topic of cybersecurity. From Web Summit 2018, meet the defender of the US Democratic Party in the cyber war against hackers, Rafi Krikorian, as he and Sam Biddle of The Intercept ask the question, how can we defend democracy against cyber attacks?
I know the topic is about hacking and the threat of hackers and cybersecurity, but for those of you who were following the US midterm vote this week, it was plagued by technical problems, some which seemed like flukes, some which seemed like maybe negligence. I wonder, given the outside threat of foreign actors trying to sabotage the election, and then just sort of homegrown ineptitude, where, you know, we're using voting machines that are still running Windows XP and sure. Whatnot, what is the bigger threat? I mean, they're both serious, but
I mean, I'm not sure it's fair to say which is a bigger threat. They're different threats, right? Like, the voting system in the United States is antiquated, and antiquated in, like, pretty bad ways. Like, it's not just a matter of there are machines that are running Windows XP out there. Like, there's just a systematic lack of thought on how voting should be done technically. Like, I'm one of the few people who will probably, one of the few technologists who is probably not going to say, we should put it all in the blockchain, but instead, instead I'll be like, we need open source voting machines with verifiable paper trails. Like, I want, like, warehouses of ballots that we can, like, audit later if there's ever a question on what the computers did. So I think, like, we need to rethink completely the way we do elections. So, like, we need to think about that. And like you mentioned before, there's just process problems, complete process problems. Like, at least in the United States, every single state does voting differently. Georgia is a good example. Georgia didn't have any form of paper ballot. It's all electronic ballot. And some of the voting machines were delivered to a county without power cords.
Right.
So, like, there are, like, potentially not just negligent, but potentially just voter suppression tactics going on
exactly. In
like the way that we're deploying technology into the field.
How can you, from your position, advocate for a voting system that literally works and isn't going to break down and cause huge backlog lines on election day?
So we spent a lot of time at the National Party talking to secretaries of state, those who are actually responsible of running the actual elections, and try giving them what our advice would be. Like, if, you know, the technology team at the DNC, at the National Party, is a 35-person team. We're industry veterans. Like, we come from Uber, Twitter, Google, Facebook. We fused it with the campaign side of people who've done technology in the campaigns, whether it be the Obama campaigns or the Secretary Clinton campaign. So we have a lot of ideas and perspectives here. So, like, we talk to Secretary of States all the time around, like, how we would do it if we were in charge, just to sort of seed that conversation. So that's number one. Number two is we actually worked with DEF CON over in Las Vegas to actually sponsor hacking of these machines, hacking of the Secretary of State's websites, simulated hacking, of course, to show how easy it is to basically shine a light on what all the problems could be and where the potential solutions could be. So, like, the Secretary of State's websites are a great example. It's not just the machine itself that tallies the vote, but the actual vote tally is published on a website for everyone to see. But, like, how do I have faith that that website wasn't hacked and someone just changed all the numbers that people can see? So there's a whole back office infrastructure that needs to be worked on as well.
So you're saying we need hackers.
We absolutely
as much as we need a guard against them.
I mean, so, like, when we were at Twitter and Uber, we ran a whole bunch of hacking programs, right? Come hack us, we'll play a bug bounty, tell us before you go to the press so we have an opportunity to fix it. We absolutely need to do the same thing with not just with, like, our democracy, but specifically with, like, our election machines and the back office systems. And then finally, what we do also at the DNC is we just collect a lot of data. So, like, as you're out there as you go and try to vote and something goes wrong, let us know. We have a voter hotline. Let us know. Well, we take notes, we collect trends, we collect statistics, so we can at least highlight like a prioritization of, like, where places need to be fixed first, kind of thing.
Does the DNC have a bug bounty?
We don't have a bug bounty yet, but I want to stress yet, because this is something we've been talking actively about within the party, because, you know, the DNC itself, we maintain all the infrastructure that every single campaign with a D next to it uses. So every campaign, whether you like the Democrats or not, if you have a D next to you, you're using my technology to run the voter file, to do analytics, to access volunteers, to manage all your contributions and things like that. So we've been thinking very heavily now that we're passed through, we're on like election day plus two. So now that we're past the midterms, we should be turning as much of this over to a set of white hat hackers to actually try to find the vulnerabilities for us so we can do it. We do regular penetration tests, though, against the DNC to try to find any obvious issues that we need to be correcting fairly regularly. So this way we can just go one level further and like actually give them the book of like, I want you to go after my voter file. I want you to go after our interfaces and see where we can find places there.
And how, I mean, what is the change been 2 years later in terms of plugging those holes? I know that's the big question.
No, a lot. I mean, so again, like 35-person team, our chief security
officer.
Which is tiny
compared to something like Google.
We can get to that in a second. But like 35-person team, like the DNC's technology team historically has been about 7 people. So already we're actually the largest team in a national party is technology and doing investments there so we can figure out what's the path forward. So we've done a lot over the last 18 months, but I want to emphasize that's not just technology that we're fixing. It's sort of like we're trying to introduce a culture change into the party on how we should think about technology. So a good example here is that, you know, we've been trying to introduce secure encrypted end-to-end messaging for everyone in the party. So if you work at the DNC or any of our related organizations, you're using Signal today as a way to communicate with each other. We don't use text messaging. And the way that we push that out is that we actually got the chair of the party, you know, the former Secretary of Labor, Tom Perez, to stand up to the entire party and say, if you want to talk to me, Tom Perez, you have to use Signal. I will not pick up the phone otherwise. So we're trying to like make these massive changes because like humans are always going to be our weakest link. Like we can get all the technology in place, but if someone still makes a mistake or someone like leaks information through side channels or things like that, that's going to be our real problem that we need to go fix.
Well, so of course in 2016, part of how the trouble started was people clicking links they shouldn't have clicked on.
Yep.
How do you, you know, you can have all the technology in the world, but if someone falls for a trick and they get duped by a hacker, they click on a link that looks like something, you know, that isn't what it looks to be, you're in big trouble. How do you account for that? You can't software your way out of that all the time.
I mean, so again, like we lean heavily on culture change. So like we've actually run simulated phishing attacks against everyone in the party now on a regular basis. And like what has caused, we're not 100%, no one's ever 100% of these things, but what has caused is a series of questions to our team. Whenever there's any questionable link, it's just like, hey, Rafi, is this you? Or are you going to embarrass me when I click on it? I'm like, no, that is not me. We need to go and chase that one down. Also, we've also done a bunch of work on, obviously, two-factor authentication, password complexity, moving a bunch of our services to the cloud, putting a bunch of services around our emails and around all our messaging apps to try to get the best defenses we can. But again, we're mindful of the fact that like technology will not get us to 100%. It's about training people that if you see something, say something so we can chase it down.
Do you assume that this will happen again? I mean, if it's not 100%, Is there a part of you that thinks, well, you know, inevitably, statistically, something has to go wrong?
That's the posture you have to be in. So, I mean, like, people ask me all the time, do you feel comfortable on the DNC's Wi-Fi when you're in the building? And the answer is no. Like, of course I'm not comfortable. Like, this network has been penetrated by nation-state actors before.
Why even have Wi-Fi?
That's a good question, I suppose. But, like, we all have our cell phones and things like that. There's a convenience mechanism, but we can change the attack surface a lot. And that's the kind of stuff that we've been focusing on. Instead of having VPNs, what if we just we push authentication all the way to the edge and have a zero trust network instead inside the building? So like those are the kind of changes that we need to go do.
That makes a lot of sense. But I mean, so you come from a Silicon Valley background, you're a technologist, you're a CTO. Tell me about, you know, the pressure of, you know, sort of dropping off these technologies that make you more vulnerable and sort of going lo-fi versus turning to tech solutions. And I'm sure there must be a lot of vendors who say, hey, we're gonna help you avoid another 2016.
Sure.
They might wanna sell you on a more secure network, a more secure VPN. But you're saying maybe the answer is to use fewer tools.
Our complete play right now is just less complexity. So like one of the things that we've also done is we've just consolidated a bunch of the services we use. So it's not surprising. If you're an institutional organization, and the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, is the longest lived political organization in the world right now. So if you're an institution and you're trying to make that kind of change, it's not surprising it's going to be hard, but it's also not surprising that they would spend a lot of their time trying to spend as little money as possible. So like they sign up for free services here or like a cheap version of X, and they accrue a whole bunch of services over time. A lot of what my team has been doing, honestly, is consolidating and simplifying. So like we've moved everyone to the G Suite, and we've like removed all the other file sharing mechanisms and just put them all on G Drive. So we only have one thing we need to go secure, and we can secure it really well. So like, yeah, lo-fi might be not the sexy way to think about it, but we think about it more as just like, we just gotta get the bread and butter right. So let's just simplify it, get that foundation correct, and then we can expand again if we have to.
How confident do you feel about 2020 tech-wise, results-wise?
I mean, our goal for 2020 is that technology should fade to the background. Like, we don't want 2020 to be about technology. We want 2020 to be about the best candidate for the right message, for the right demographic, for the electorate. So technology should be the thing that enables them to do that. It should not be the thing that's out front and they're running with technology. That being said, on the security front, like, I don't sleep well. I think, like, again, we have documented evidence that we have foreign state actors attempting to penetrate the political committee and our electoral process. When I was at Twitter and Uber, I commanded $300 million or $500 million yearly budgets for my department alone, and the DNC commands a $100 million budget for its entire operation. So we're vastly outgunned. So on that alone, I'm very nervous, and me and my team just don't sleep well at night. We're always trying to figure out, what did we miss? Who should we ask for help from? How can we build an ecosystem defense against around the Democrats?
How far away are you from that?
I'm sure I'll be working on this up until Election Day 2020, 725 days.
Who's counting? How much recruiting do you do from Silicon Valley?
I mean,
talent-wise.
Yeah, we do recruitment from everywhere. So the tech team at the DNC is the only team that's not in building. So we have engineers that are from New York, from Chicago, from San Francisco, from Portland, Oregon. We have a data scientist in North Carolina. We have people in Texas. So we try to find the best talent no matter where we can find them. But that being said, recruiting is actually strangely not hard for us. I mean, we are more budget limited than anything else. I joined the DNC in July of 17, and we put out a job description for a general software engineer. Some full stack engineer can help us across the board. Within a week, we had 500 applicants. So like, we have people who want to go help because democracy is on fire in a lot of ways. And so we're trying to figure out, honestly, how do we like leverage the whole slew of people and make them volunteers for us, because I don't have the budget to hire all these people that want to go help us.
Are you ever hesitant hiring from, you know, say, Facebook or Twitter, given, I know that that's your old home, but they haven't exactly done the best job safeguarding our democracy over the past 2 years either.
I think it's unfair to paint every engineer with the same brush that you paint the company. So
sure.
So we've hired from Facebook and Twitter. Like, in fact, the person who runs my engineering team, the engineering subgroup within tech at Twitter, used to run all of abuse engineering at Twitter itself. So like, he was in charge of all these systems, and he would say he never had enough resources, he never had enough empowerment, and he's doing a spectacular job running engineering inside the party, because we try to give him as much as we possibly can, all the way up to the chair. We try to give him everything he needs in order to pull that job off. So like, yeah, so do I get nervous? No, I mean, like, we've tried to find a diverse set of engineers. In fact, the vast majority of our tech team at the DNC is women. So we try to find a diverse set of engineers who bring a whole variety of experiences to the table, and we just passionately want to fix democracy right now.
Has it been frustrating watching how Facebook has sort of tripped over its feet over and over and over again over the past year while
you're
trying to...
This is the number one communication platform on the planet, so of course it's frustrating.
Yeah.
We're like, look, guys, like, we're trying to do everything we can over here, and you guys are making it not
easy. So what is that relationship like?
We actually have a pretty good relationship. We have a pretty good relationship with all the social media platforms. That's one of the benefits of having our team in place, because we've worked at most of these places. So, like, for example, for Twitter, they're able to take down tens of thousands of fraudulent accounts running up to the election. For Facebook, like, we are plugged into every single time time they are concerned that one of our candidates may have been hacked, they let us know. So like we have a very good and open working relationship with all of them. But the thing I would say to all of them though is like, you guys, you, your sub teams on these companies need more resources. Like you're probably only 10% of the way there. You need more. I love what you're doing, but give us more.
Is it just a matter of money and people power?
I mean, the incentives are wrong for most of these social media companies, right? Their incentives are around advertising dollars, capturing your attention, engagement, and things like that. So there needs to be a dramatic shift, whether it be their board of directors making this a massive priority for the company for social good purposes, whether it's smarter regulation that forces them to go do it. I don't know what the answer is, but currently the incentives are wrong, and they only really do this type of work in the run-up toward elections. Like, you've heard all about what Facebook and Twitter and Google and stuff have done for the last month leading up to last Tuesday, but it's Thursday now and you're not hearing about it anymore.
No,
and like
not.
These are like year-long problems, decade-long problems that need to be worked on. They can't be worked on the cyclical mechanism.
Do you work more closely with people who are doing security work at the federal level or people who are doing that kind of work at Facebook or Twitter? I mean,
we have good relationships with both. So on the federal side, we actually have open lines of communication with most of the three-letter agencies in the United States. Like it wouldn't be surprising. Every single week, I have an email in my inbox from at least one of them. So like they're constantly and regularly reaching out to us to see what they can do, how they can help. Is there information we have that we can feed to them or vice versa? But again, I would say the exact same thing to them that I said to most of the social media companies. Love what you're doing. You need to do more. Like we just need more here.
Well, one of the big problems in 2016 was federal agencies, the three-letter agencies, were getting this threat intelligence, but because it was classified, they couldn't share it around. So it ended up just sort of sitting in a silo. And no one could use it. The NSA was aware that Russian hackers are trying to break into a Florida voting vendor for months before they could tell Homeland Security and so forth. Has that gotten any better? The ability to relay information to the people who need it and who can actually use it rather than just sitting on it?
Yeah, we definitely have evidence. I mean, obviously, we're not read into everything the three-letter agencies do. We're a political party, not the government. But we have evidence that they are working closer together and sharing more information within themselves. Our biggest concern is that there doesn't seem to be centralized leadership around this. Like, there needs to be someone who's overseeing all the work across all the multidisciplinary agencies that are touching the election space, disinformation space, Secretary of State, and everything. There needs to be single leadership across that, and that seems to be lacking.
What worries you if you've got phishing covered? If you've got you've got your VPNs locked down? I mean, what's still? I know I'm not asking you to give any tips. Give anyone any hints of how to get in. But I mean, I assume you said that there's still a lot more work to be done.
I mean, the thing that freaks us out, obviously, is the unknown unknowns. Like, any sophisticated attack is not going to be detected. Like, we could have been hacked yesterday, we could be hacked tomorrow, and we just won't know it. So for us, it's always about, like, we're in an arms race. For us, it's always about trying to beef up detection mechanisms, beef up any kind of anomaly detections that we want to go do to try to really see what's there so we can react to it. There's always a danger of fighting last year's battle, so we want to make sure that we have the right foundations in place for phishing, for the VPN, and et cetera, network topology, turning off all the machinery we don't need anymore, just reducing surface area, reducing complexity. But it's that next thing, the next thing after that, that we're always worried about. So our security team just spends a lot of time honestly just poking around, listening to other people, talking to the ecosystem to see what they would do in our spots, and let's go poke there and look there too. We just don't know what's around the corner, so we're just trying to be as vigilant as we possibly can.
How much of your focus is on Russia? I mean, it's been a Russia-heavy couple years, but do you worry about China, Iran? It's hardly only Russia who might want to their finger in.
Yeah, we have concrete evidence that the Russians interfered in 2016. That has been corroborated by all the national security agencies.
I mean, going forward.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. So they will continue to be a concern of ours moving forward. But honestly, like, I really do not care as much as practically possible where a potential attack should come from. Like, our number one job is to secure the ability for us to run a campaign, and ability for us to run a primary, and then ability for us to participate in the general election. So like, we will put our defenses up and make sure we can protect everything no matter where it comes from. That being said, I am worried about everyone. Like in the world that we live in, the internet was not designed for this type of manipulation and this type. It wasn't designed to defend against this type of manipulation or this type of attack. So I'm worried that like anywhere at any time, someone could have an idea that could somehow impact us, and we need to prepare against that. So it's a daunting task, that alone.
How do you make it more of a priority funding-wise within the DNC? I mean, it sounds like you're still sort of resource crunched. And
I mean,
last question, we're almost over here.
I mean, we already are the largest team in the building. We already command the largest single budget within the building. The real question, though, is all the campaigns and all the state parties, the Democrats are a distributed organization. We believe that politics is local, so that like Californians should be able to do whatever they want to do within boundaries, that the Georgia should be able to do something different, et cetera, et cetera. So the real problem is how to make sure they're all on the same page we're at. So we're just trying to lead by example, and then we offer to go help deploy, help with funding, whatever it needs to be to try to get us all on the same unified platform. So that's really our biggest challenge, is getting like all the distributed ecosystem of Democrats in the same place.
All right. Well, I'm afraid that's our time. Everyone, please give Rafi a round of applause here.